The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hey, I'm Nick Hallett.
And I'm Andy Lorai.
Listen to our Minnesota soccer podcast here on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network, where we'll break down Minnesota United and all other soccer around the globe.
Now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
I got one thing to read before we bring on our guest here. I got two cats at home. You know, I like to take care of them. So Pets Life, the company that we've been partnered with, is a Minnesota pet care company that has created an oral care product for your cat or dog that is 100% natural, 100% safe, and 100% guaranteed to improve, your pet's oral health. Save hundreds in vet bills and improve your pet's health by visiting PetsLife.com. That's PETZLife.com. Enter the promo code OMAHA, as in the second part of Cold Omaha, and save 20% on every online order. Or mention OMAHA for 20% off any phone order. That's PetsLife.com, spelled with a Z. PETZLife.com. Okay, we're back in Studio 4, episode number 23 of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find us for Cold Omaha on Twitter at Cold Omaha M. And like I said, this is episode number 23. My name is Brandon Warren. I am your host. I'm joined, as always, by my producer when we're in studio, Tom Schreier. Tom, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Not too bad. Had a little bit of a reprieve during the Yankees series, so did you spend it doing anything worthwhile?
Yeah, I went to a wedding in Sacramento, which is super, super fun.
Sacramento, so the capital of California.
Not a lot out there, but it was a fun wedding.
Oh, well, that's great. And very delighted to have back in studio again, kind of our every other week hopscotch guest. Try not to bark at you, but Mike Berardino in the studio. Mike, how are we doing?
I'm good. I once interviewed for a job in Sacramento, and
really?
I finished second.
Really?
I would have been very happy to go there when I was living in Augusta, Georgia. I wanted to make that move from Augusta to Sacramento.
Was it the Sacramento Bee?
Sacramento Bee.
Does that still exist?
It does.
Okay.
And Eileen Voisin beat me out. She was coming from the Atlanta Journal, and she's still there. She's done a good job. She really knows the NBA.
Cousins who lived in Augusta, they said it was kind of an odd place.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Not great. It's okay, and for 1 week a year, it's epicenter.
I like to hear that people hang out, that have that longevity at newspapers. So if you had gotten that job, how would your life have changed to where you are now versus then? Because you said she knows the NBA. Were you going for a basketball job?
It was general assignment more stuff. It was just here and there, back up this and that. You know, the Kings are huge there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they have mainly. But AAA baseball, right? pretty cool place. Obviously, capital city. I was impressed. I have not been back. Then UC Davis is like 30 minutes away.
Yeah,
and that's really a cool little town, Davis, California. So
I was gonna say the arena is like in the middle of a neighborhood. It's not even downtown.
Oh, really?
It's kind of a wacky deal. But they do cover Bay Area sports, I believe.
How far is that from where you went to school?
2 hours. A couple guys, actually, most of the people I know drove up. It's probably not a primary beat or whatever, but they were at the Sharks playoff games, and they were at it anytime there was a critical, like, Kings game or something like that, they were in the Sharks press box.
Did you guys watch that game 7 of the finals?
I caught the final quarter, and I thought that was a pretty cool result.
Great game, but true to form, if you saw the fourth quarter, I think you saw most of everything you needed to see, which I think is the indictment I have on the NBA. Again, instant classic, fantastic game. But the fourth quarter is where all the drama was, and you knew, based on the series, if you go to a seventh game, that fourth quarter is going to be pivotal. They had the Kevin Love defensive stop. You had the block on the layup by LeBron.
Wow.
It was an incredible effort. And then when he went to the floor with like 11 seconds left, I thought they broke him in half. I was like, there's no way he's going to be able to take these free throws. And then he misses the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, because he needed the last one to make it a 4-point deficit.
I could hear Skip Bayless. We were having that conversation in my living room. I could hear Skip Bayless cackling at the idea that he was so selfish as to take both those free throws with a fractured wrist.
Right.
You know, and the first one looked like the wrist really was a mm-hmm. problem, and then somehow he willed in the second one.
I couldn't figure out what was hurting him, because when he went to the floor, he was face down, and I couldn't tell if he'd gotten kneed in a sensitive area or what was on. But Great job by him to nail that fourth one and basically render that last trip down the court for the Warriors useless. Just a great deal for Cleveland. You know, you want to root for Cleveland. Now Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul, you know, Twin Cities becomes the number one media market without a major championship. And again, I like to celebrate the Lynx. I think what they're doing is great, and they're unbeaten still. But for the major Big Four championships, now Minnesota has edged out D.C. You know, the football club had the, what was it, the 92 championship, so...
Was that here?
That was one here.
Yeah. Because that's where Paul Molitor said he met Muhammad Ali.
That's right.
Oh, that's
and
crazy.
So there's like a three-month blip in there that separates the Twins' 91 World Series from the 92 Super Bowl. And so now we become the most long-suffering fan base in all of America, and...
That has at least three of the four.
Oh, is it three of the four? Okay, yeah.
You got to have at least three of them because obviously Salt Lake and Portland.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
Atlanta had four for a while now.
No, Atlanta has three, but their 95 is their last championship, right?
Yeah, I think so. And they had four, and the Thrashers moved to
Winnipeg.
So, anyway, we're kind of dancing around baseball instead, but it's kind of fun. You know, so you now live in the media market with the longest championship drought. How excited is that? How excited are you for that?
Putting that right on my resume right now. That's impressive.
There you go. Yeah, I got to update it.
No real sense that'll end anytime soon either. They might be able to extend it a bit. Vikings might be
unless
the
Vikings break through, but
and the Wolves maybe 3 years from now.
They're actually the Wolves. The first odds came out from Vegas are the number five as far as highest odds or best odds in the West.
Really.
So, I mean, I know you're not going to map out the Western Conference 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 based on that, but apparently having Thibs and having
Towns.
Yep, Towns, the number five pick, whatever direction they go with that, has them on the radar. So that's kind of cool. I don't know that I'm going to be putting down $100 on the 40-to-1 odds to, you know, get excited about cashing that in, but we'll see.
Seems a little early in
hasty.
The process.
A little hasty.
I'd say give it a year or two, and then... And then they'll be perennial contenders.
So a team that we're not putting any money down on is the Twins, 21-48.
Now we get to it.
Coming off an off day and welcoming the Phillies into town. Actually, the Phillies just read an article on FanGraphs yesterday, now have the worst offense in baseball by, I think it's weighted runs created plus. It's a FanGraphs measure, but it basically takes everything an offense is supposed to do, polishes it all up nice, and then puts it on league average. Everybody thought the Braves, who the Twins, I believe, play in the pretty near future. I think they play like
July
their 100th game
August.
Of the year against them. The Braves were dead last for a long time. They were slugging under 300, which is unconscionably bad for it as a team. They hit two home runs on the first game of the season and then didn't hit another one for, I think, like 19 games. Again, with all the issues that you've seen the Twins have, the Braves have been on perhaps even another level. Now, the Twins are two games behind them in the quote-unquote race for the number one draft pick. And when I say behind, I mean the Twins have the worst record. The Braves have two more wins. But anyway, the Phillies' offense has obviously been struggling. I am, though, however, excited to see tonight's starter. I don't know if you guys know much about Aaron Nola, but a very exciting pitcher that is I think they took the top 10 in the last two or three years in the draft.
I think Cole Stewart was in that Cole Stewart draft, I believe.
Yeah. And so I know Nola was at or near the top of lists then. The college pitchers that aren't the next Justin Verlander, the next David Price, kind of get bumped. You know, they have that 92 with command, I think like the Justin Dunn Boston College situation this year. But he's had a pretty rapid ascension through this Philly system, and he's become a pretty exciting pitcher. Mike, have you watched any of him at all?
Have not seen Aaron Nola. I remember pitchability was a big word with him. Like the good scouting word that he would be around the plate and be able to eat some innings, and he was pretty close to the majors, and it turned out that way. I don't think he has number one or two stuff even, but mid-rotation guy, I guess. Is that fair?
So basically, FanGraphs guy, August Fagerstrom, who we've actually had on the show here, really good guy, had broken down his curveball, and apparently he's got the best curveball in terms of stats against, whether it's, I don't know if it's batting line or swinging strikes or whatever. So apparently look out for the curveball with him, but yeah, again, 92, 93 with good command. That's enough in today's game, especially with how many pitchers we've seen struggle. He's been one of, I think, the 10 or 15 best pitchers in the National League, which is really saying something based on how top heavy that
and
league is.
And that ballpark, guys. I mean, that is a tough place to pitch. Having and covering the Marlins for those years, I've been in that park enough, Citizens Bank, and you know, little pop flies to left do carry out, and it's jacked up all their numbers artificially, and that's why weighted runs created plus is so vital.
Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful measure. If you only look at one number on that sea of numbers, that, you know, for an offense that even allowed, you might just choose that one because it does normalize for park and league, and it really breaks it down.
Do you, when a team comes into town, do you find yourself looking at players, specific players, and being like, I'd like to see this guy play? Or, you know, for you, I feel like it would kind of become old hat because you've covered so many games that maybe it's just a grind and you get through the day and you do your work. But do you ever have a situation where, like, oh, you know, I'd really like to see, like, for me, Michael Franco, Odubel Herrera, there's a couple guys in that lineup. Again, the offense has been really, really poor. But there's a couple guys in that lineup I'd like to see. I still haven't seen Ryan Howard play live, and granted, it's what's
you
left,
missed it.
It's what's left of
you
Ryan Howard
it.
At this point.
I saw him at his peak there about a decade ago when he was, you know, 55 homer guy or whatever, and that was raw, massive power that was carried into the game. But, you know, he just broke down. And I remember ripping that contract at the time that he got it, a long term deal. That's a huge albatross, and you could tell he was a bad body guy who was already mm-hmm. trending. Starting to level off trend-wise, and that's why Ruben Amaro, now a first base coach for the Red Sox instead of a general manager.
Well, and so he's got 24 hits this year. He's hitting 145 in almost 200 plate appearances, which is almost incredible,
yeah,
almost unbelievable. Almost half of his hits, 10 of 24, have been home runs. And I think that contract is actually up after this season. But the big issue there, too, was he blew out his Achilles in the playoffs, and it was before the contract even started. And he, like you said, he was already on the downswing. So, I mean, I like to see him. You know, Carlos Ruiz. You know, again,
Chooch,
another guy,
a big Chooch fan.
Well, another guy that's just, you know, on the downswing. You know,
Cameron Rupp in the spring. I'm interested to see him swing the bat because mm-hmm. the former University of Texas guy, I believe, he hit two lasers in the spring. Granted, but they caught Molitor's attention that day because they got out in a hurry. I forget who they're off. You know, for a team that will be looking around for catching at the end of the year, probably, I kind of have him in the back of my mind as a guy who certainly can hit more than your typical catcher.
Have you?
They have catching coming.
Sure.
They have two of them, Alfaro and another.
Yeah, Jorge Alfaro.
The other guy saw out in the fall league.
Because one's at AA and one's at AAA.
They're both very well regarded, and one will probably end up playing the outfield, one will catch, but they're going to be major leaguers.
Yeah, I can't remember who the other one is. The other guy,
Andrew Knapp.
Knapp, yep, because he had a two-run single with the bases loaded against Jose Berríos in a game I was watching, where Berríos had gotten squeezed on the pitch before, ended up walking a guy to fill the bases. So I don't know why I couldn't remember
Knapp
the name.
And Alfaro. Yeah, yep. The Phillies are doing a nice job, and again, you know, Klentak is there. Now they brought him over to Andy McPhail is overseeing the front office now in the post-Pat Gillick era. But after being, you know, they were very successful. They had a nice long window of mm-hmm. production and contention and a championship in there. But they kind of, they did maybe the bare minimum of what they should have done with what they were spending on all that talent and the rotation they had compiled, you know, all-time guys. And now they got so bad they had to break it down, and they're trying to rebuild it with a heavy dose of sabermetrics. So for you guys, it'll be interesting to see where that factors in. And I liked what they did. I haven't paid very close attention to them lately, but I think the first few weeks of the season, they were getting praise for the way they rebuild a bullpen on the fly, pretty much using advanced metrics and finding undervalued pieces. They mm-hmm. didn't go out and spend on the bullpen. That's where people rip the Twins for not spending on the bullpen this offseason. I didn't have a problem, really, with them not going after $6 million lefties who would just be so pointless to have at this, you know, at this stage.
It'd been disastrous almost.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really need Bastardo and Sip when you're 21 and 48. But I always think that teams should be fortifying in the offseason, and they did it with which you could say they did it with Abad, and Kinsler's pretty good value.
He's not bad.
There's others, though. I just load up on those guys. As many of those minor league deals for guys with major league time who you think you're going to get on the bounce back because the sample is so small in a bullpen that no matter how great a year a bullpen guy has, look at Mark Lowe. Mm-hmm. That's his, you know, the Tigers bought him at the peak of his value, and now he's horrible, and they have nowhere to go with him. And you always should buy on the upswing. You look for undervalued relievers in a winter. And, you know, that's why the stat is better or worse. And I would say generally for the better. Terry Ryan, as in my research, as and going back even to the late McPhail days, I'm not sure that going back to the 87 championship, I could not find a multi-year deal for a reliever that the Twins gave out who was coming in from the outside.
Yeah, not in-house, like Joe Nathan.
Yeah. I mean, they'll retain you. Well, even Jared Burton, they extended him mm-hmm. after they got him off waivers when they're a known quantity. But they don't want to bid against the field with a multi-year deal for a reliever. So I think that's something that the Twins deserve credit for, believe it or not. They get crushed for not reaching out and being aggressive, three-year, $18 million deal for Sip maybe. No, I think that's wise bullpen construction, and the Phillies did it, and other teams have done it, and the ones that do stretch out, look at the Mets. How happy do you think the Mets are with Bastardo right now?
I mean, exactly. Well,
the situational lefties, by design, are going to fluctuate madly from year to year.
Another name you didn't mention is Buddy Beauchers, who's been pretty
yeah.
decent with the Twins.
Yeah.
And Andrew Bailey, I think, was one of the guys that the Phillies did that with. He was an all-star closer with mm-hmm. the A's. But the Twins have done that with Casey Fien, with Jared Burton. Even Jason Bulger, who had been with the Angels beforehand, didn't pan out. But nothing wagered, nothing lost on minor league deals. And that's why the bullpen, build a bullpen strategy that they've employed, I have no problem with. The other thing is you have to promise 40-man spots besides the cash. And when you've got, you know, those 40-man spots, you know who you would have been kicking out if you would have signed, say, two relievers like everybody wanted to?
Sure.
Michael Tonkin. Who's been one of their best relievers? Michael Tonkin. Who else are you kicking out? Ryan Pressly. Who has better raw stuff than Ryan Pressly in this bullpen right now? Nobody, right?
Oh, he's taken a huge step forward, and Terry talked about that the other day, that
yeah,
he now has plus stuff,
yeah.
Fastball at least. And, yeah, the fact he can spin a curveball and a slider. The only thing that holds Pressly back at this point, and he's been overused. He's on pace for about 90 innings.
Oof.
So, you know, you got to take what he's done, any of the struggles lately, you have to filter them through that. But I just think deep down there's a belief that needs to be there that he can attack and blow people away in the zone and doesn't have to be cute at all. And sometimes he does pick, and he forgets. He thinks of himself maybe as the guy who was rule-fived because there was no room for him in the Red Sox top 30 prospects. Well, the Red Sox top 30 prospects back then and now was loaded. So he was a good risk, and I like the guy. I think he's a true competitor and a gamer, and he'll take the ball, and he doesn't complain about anything. But there's that. I think the question was asked of Terry. What is the next step, the final step Pressly needs
One
to take?
One word answer.
He said command.
Yep.
I would say belief.
Faith.
I think it's a total belief in oneself that separates. I'll tell you who has that, and we're going to see him in the second half. And I could be, you know, you could say, well, it's minor leaguers. Oh, you saw him in the fall league. Wait till Trevor Hildenberger gets here. You're going to love this guy.
He follows me on Twitter, actually.
He's my. I said this going into the year. People asked me in the winter for your bullpen sleeper. I said of all those hard throwing guys, I like Trevor Hildenberger, Berkeley guy. Closed out plenty of games in the Pac-12, and then since he's gotten to pro ball, look at his strikeout to walk ratio, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And what I also like is he's a Berkeley guy. He's going to be smart,
right?
But he does something that a sidewinder doesn't normally have the ability to do, and that is bring the arm angle back up to traditional high three quarters within an at bat. He doesn't just have to stay that. He can almost El Duque like. And I'll change it up and become a different release point for you at any point. So if you're a hitter, that's not comfortable because generally he's down here at the submarine area or a little above mm-hmm. sidewinder with firm. It's pretty firm. It comes in 90-91. And then he can also – lefties see that so well that
that's
I think against lefties he'll come up here and he'll drop in a changeup on you too. He can. So he's a double A now, and he's dominant. And every level he's been at, you've seen it. I believe the career, it's like a 10 or 12 to 1 ratio strikeouts to walks. I don't want to overstate it, but I'm saying in terms of that total belief. And he came up, they did a smart thing. They brought him up for the exhibition games in D.C. into the season. And the coolest moment was he came in there and he got to face Bryce Harper. And how would he go about it? He went right after him. And I believe he gave up a single up the middle. Almost took his head off, as I recall. But he went right after him. There was no picking and sticking a toe in the water.
These numbers are eye-popping. 1.57 ERA in 126 and a third innings. 10.3 strikeouts per nine. 1.1 walks per nine. So a 0.82 whip across. Let's see. That. So
22nd round, too. Yeah, they got value.
You're going from rookie ball to double A, so 4 or 5 levels, fall league. Is 25, he'll be 26 in December. That, so you'll probably
He's coming here soon. There's no reason to baby him. It's just a matter of, I think you'll see him in the second half. Mm-hmm. And also, it would not shock me at all if he led the team in saves here in the second half, because somebody, if they just give him that spot, if they give him a shot at it, I think he'll handle it just fine, because we've seen it. Guys like that can handle it. It doesn't have to be 99 and 4 walks a game. Give me that. Give me those numbers in that role, and I'll take my chances.
When I look at those numbers, I wonder what his batted ball profile is, too, because if he's grounders besides, that's a nasty – a guy that you might start at the front of the pen because you want to use him as like a situational ground ball guy, which Brandon Kinstler I think would be very good at. He's at about 70% ground ball rate, which is unthinkable. Or 65 last I checked. Yeah. It's like top 3-4 in baseball. A guy like that is very valuable at the front of your bullpen. Now, he's working in the back because he's been pretty good. But guys like that, you can slot into different roles. And then that's where I think the bullpen has struggled this year, is you started with Glenn Perkins as your rock at the back end, and then everything was supposed to fall in line behind that. Again, are you building on sand instead of a rock because you knew Perkins had issues before? I don't think so. I think the belief that he was healthy is pretty justifiable. I mean, maybe it's not super justifiable, but you didn't know the shoulder stuff was going to come apart like this. Maybe eventually. But with Jepsen moved into a new role, with May moved back a little bit, and you start exposing some other guys to more heavy innings, these things can happen. I don't think they went into the season without a bullpen plan. In fact, you wrote that they had pursued Gregerson and Justin Wilson.
Yes.
Justin Wilson would have been a perfect fit for this team. We asked Mike Agcisa last week about that, and he said, I heard it too. The Twins had a better offer. They thought they had a better offer. The reason they went with the Tigers' offer was that the Tigers gave them 2 AAA starters that were close. Again, not number 2 or 3 starters, but the Yankees knew they were going to have issues with CC Sabathia. Tanaka is still one arm one arm issue from being out for a year. You've got issues with names are escaping me at this point.
Ivaldi's had some issues.
Severino was supposed to be one of their great guys.
Pineda can't be counted on.
Nope, Pineda's been peppered. He's striking everybody out, and he's given up tons of contact. Makes no sense. You can try to figure that out. But so even though the Twins might have had a better offer, maybe they offered 2 A-ball pretty nice prospects, or maybe a similar deal like Jepsen. And I know that a lot of people really like Chi-Wei Hu at AA for the Rays right now. The Twins might have thought they offered a better deal, but it just didn't fit what the Yankees needed. If you bring in Wilson, that bullpen goes from, that's pretty good, because I was a big May, Jepsen, Perkins. I supported that. If you put Wilson in that mix, you should be comfortably upper half of the American League before you consider where Tonkin and Presley have come to at this point.
And yet, that would have been a really nice piece. Plus, he's under control for a few more years. He's only going to make $1.5 million this year. He had value. I still don't think the Yankees got enough. Regardless, should have shopped him more. Yeah. Abad's outpitched him by and large, has he not this year? I think Wilson's had some blips.
Maybe the 3-run outing in the Yankee series could have evened the thing. But I agree. And honestly, I think one thing I want to ask you about, actually, we're coming up on the deadline. I think Abad's going to be a chip that they'll look to move. Are there any other names that you think will be interesting for the Twins? Do you think they'll shop Nunez?
Oh, I think you have to. I think, although there is that the thing that would pull them off of that or cause them to ask for more than maybe his value would be is that if you do that, you're fully committing to Eduardo Escobar for a while at least, unless you go out and get somebody.
His numbers are creeping up too. He really hit well in that
Yankee series. He's that's foxhole guy. I know you guys will laugh at me. That's this idea that that the makeup is just as important as the skill set or something. But that guy, he has no business being in the major leagues with those tools and that size. And
he's a little man.
I mean, if you put him on What's My Line, old school show, if you put him on What's My Line and you showed him, the audience would think he was a jockey. They would not think he was a major league ball player. And yet he comes in there and he outperforms whenever he gets a chance. I mean, I would never doubt Eduardo Escobar's ability to help a team within a season, whether he can hold up for 500, 600 at bats and handle the defensive side of it. He hasn't really had a chance to do it for a full year. So that's what you're risking if you trade away Nunez. But I also think that the offers are going to be pretty interesting if he keeps this up. Not amazing. But
can you get a catcher for him?
Pretty interesting. I don't know. I mean, that's tough because you got to line it up with a contender who's got extra catching.
And doesn't have a shortstop or third
who has
baseman.
Extra catching, period. And then, and then has a need for that particular guy. It's very dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, and so Nunez is one of those guys, but I don't think people should be thinking, oh, they're going to back up the truck for Nunez. I don't think he's going to bring – I could see him bringing maybe two more double A hard throwers with upside sort of thing. Not at somebody else's top 15, even maybe another team's number 12 prospect and number 22, something like that. I don't feel like he would bring such that people would be like, you know, wow, they really held them up. Robbie Grossman starting to trend down a little bit. How much farther will he? Will he go? Will he slide? Because he is starting to take a Terry. I'm always interested around trade times too, guys. And you guys, I know you listen closely for the little clues, both the manager and the general manager in front of you every day, and will be, which is great, right up to the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And when I hear exaggeration, like really overplaying a guy's strengths, I think he's on the market. He's just practicing his sales
cues.
Pitch. Yeah,
just little cues,
right? Terry's so good at that. When he'll break down, he can spin a ball. He can, he's afraid of nothing.
Yeah, he's not afraid. Not afraid is Terry's.
Right. That's
Terry's
when you
key
know.
Phrase.
That's when you know. He said that on Taylor Rogers a few times, and I thought he was trying to send him off this winter, but maybe he was in a Justin Wilson package. Who knows?
That could
be. And I don't think Taylor's afraid, but I think that's one of his huge selling points. Pat Dean, he's everything you'd look for in a human being.
I remember those words.
I wish somebody just one time would say that about me. Everything.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I'd like my wife to say that about me.
That has never been said about me by anyone.
You're no Pat Dean.
I'm no Pat Dean. Everything you'd look for in a human being.
From now on, I'm going to introduce you as you're not Pat. You're no Pat Dean.
But he's got a spot his fastball. I love that. He's a great guy, but he doesn't throw hard enough.
Is there any part of you that says that Nunez...
So I don't feel like Terry's really practicing the Nunez spiel. I haven't heard off the chart stuff. And Molitor totally undercut the whole trade thing. Because teams do have people in... Every team's front office has somebody in their intern or so who's looking for those quotes, telling quotes, pro or con. You're not going to read too much into it, but people are collecting these things. And so when Molitor said a couple weeks ago that it's a slippery slope to say that Eduardo Nunez is now just an everyday player. No one said, is he an all-star level player for the rest of his life? Is he now an everyday player? He said, well, it's a slippery slope because, we're just talking about 2 months. That didn't speak to me like they were ready to push him out the door for max value. Same with Robbie Grossman. They've had the opportunity to pat themselves on the back and say, this was a really great find. We're so lucky to have him. If I was trying to trade Robbie Grossman, I would say, I would accentuate all the stuff about how he stays in the zone and, throw out some numbers and the walk rate is, it's proven. It's go back to 13 and 14. This guy is as discerning a batting eye as you will find in the major leagues. He just needs an opportunity. We've given him an opportunity and he's still just 20. I'd be hammering on. He's still just 26. There's still more in the tank. I'm not hearing that. Terry the other day says, he's taking strike three too much. That didn't sound like a sales pitch to me. So if I want, that's too honest.
Yep.
That's going to get out there. I tweeted it. So
I saw it.
If it was interesting to me, it was picking at the bobble. You have this guy BAUBLE. You got this bobble, and does he really fit on your shelf for years to come? No, he's this little bobble. Get him on eBay now, and get something that you will want to put in cement, anchored in your finest showcase because. And that's probably, again, double-A kind of guy who might have had a bigger scouting profile out of the draft and now maybe has flattened out a little bit or lost ground to somebody else. Well, you can find those guys. If I give you half an afternoon, you would give me a list of 12 guys to target in double-A who could really take off that would be fair value for Robbie Grossman, Eduardo Nunez, Fernando Abad. That's where you go get them. Don't give me a guy who's buried on somebody's bench in the major leagues. get down low and get to double A. You get to double A, you're a legitimate player. You've already made it through the first real test of your career, multiple tests, 2A levels at least. Double A is where the best minor league ball is played. Find me somebody there with the skills to break out. The Trevor Hildenberger types. Right. Of course, he's not struggling. They brought back Zach Jones this week, you know, just for example. I mean, I don't know that Zach Jones will ever pitch in the major leagues. He's been kind of bulky with that shoulder and it had a bad break with a shoulder aneurysm, and plus has poor command. But he can throw 100 miles an hour at his best. And, of course, why wouldn't you take him back for $25,000? But that's the kind of guys they need to be looking for.
Is any part of you think that Grossman or Nunez, when you're building a future contender or even just laying the foundation, you have to find pieces that you will actually have as part of the next team. Does any part of you feel at all like they could be that? Now, hear me out. Nunez, for the last 2 years now, last year and this year, I mean, he's coming up on probably 450 plate appearances of a pretty good line, like a 780 OPS. I think the eye test at shortstop makes him, he's okay. He's not great. He's not as good. I think Escobar's better. But as any part of you, you know, with him being even younger than Dozier, think maybe Nunez is on the upswing and we should run with this instead of get him out of here. Because there's that perpetual Twins fan being, I don't know if it's neurotic, where everybody does more when
it's neurotic.
Yeah, everybody does better when they leave. David Ortiz, another one.
Arcia is going to be a Hall of Famer, right?
Arcia is going to be a Hall of Famer.
I wouldn't worry about that.
But I mean with Nunez, the next thing, maybe he goes on and he sustains an 800 OPS for the next 8 years.
Can't operate in fear. I can see why the fan base would root in fear and follow these things in fear. Mm-hmm. But if you're Terry Ryan in this situation where you are with your total system failure and you need to win trades, you can't just have fair deals now. You need to win. Who else has been saying that lately? But
sounds like Al Davis.
You have an opportunity maybe to win with each of these pieces that don't obviously fit in. Now, you know, there are obvious guys that they will be shopping. They would like Kevin Jepsen to have two or three outings without giving up multiple hits. That would be nice, so they could move that money off the books. And he's still throwing plenty hard. I do think that they'll find a suitor for him. The problem is the Twins don't like to send money along. Mm-mm. And he might be one of those. Again, you know that it's been the way the sliding scale has worked now for more than a decade. If you have a guy like Jepsen, who's got some value but still is going to have about $2 million left on his deal by August 1st, the textbook way to do it in the modern game is to send along the $2 million to buy prospects. You'll get a couple. You might get one. You might just have to send along $2 million to get one upside arm
possibly
from double
useful.
A.
Possibly useful.
But the Twins' way has been, and we've seen it with Kendrys Morales, who they traded him. You know, they got nothing. Stephen Pryor, because Seattle took all the money. They got rid of Domit. The Braves took all the money, amazingly. Gilmartin, yeah, was probably
like post-hype
guy that
guys.
Yeah. I have not. Well, they have yet to send along money in my time here, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure they've ever done it where they send along money. But then the Padres just sent along $31 million to get rid of James Shields, and I don't know what they brought back of exactly, but it wasn't amazing.
Sounds like money well spent at this point, though.
Right? So Jepsen, point is, if you want to get something interesting for Jepsen between now and July 31st, you probably have to pay off the rest of his second half salary. That's just how it's done, and the Twins won't do that, and so then people will shrug at what they get back.
Before we let you go, one last thing. Is Trevor Plouffe in a Twins uniform come August 1st? And this is a tough one.
Because
I really like Trevor Plouffe as a guy. As a player, when he's going well, you got a guy that can hit a little bit. He's turned himself into, I think, a pretty good defensive third baseman. But the problem is he plays third base, and you have somebody that needs to be at third base.
I don't think they have to do it in season. I think there's, you know, but any time that you take away from him at third, I agree with you. I think Sano should not play any more right field. I think that's he needs to be DH or third baseman or first baseman. And mm-hmm. that's why maybe we saw Plouffe at first the other day, to remind him that he's got that there. They've got that also can extend Plouffe's trade value, if you can say to a team that needs a first baseman more than a third baseman. But short answer would be my gut tells me they still won't be able to get proper value for him right now. But at least he's a $7.25 million player now, not 9 or 10
next year.
In because in the winter he'll be viewed that way. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to think that this is the time that they will trade him to open up a third for Sano, that'll be a tough one for Molitor because you know how much he's leaned on Plouffe, and Plouffe has given him in that clubhouse what he wanted, and he's when healthy, he's given him effort. It's not a typical Trevor Plouffe year, but signs of improvement lately, and that will only make him more tradable.
I think you're right about the Sano thing because I think Terry picked his words very carefully when somebody said, I think it was Derek Wetmore asked,
yes.
Have we seen the last, or are you committing to him in right field? And he said, oh, it's too preliminary. He could have just said, nah, we'll have him back out there. It didn't even need to be the truth because things can change in a week. Things can change in 2 weeks.
Yeah, there's wiggle room. Yeah.
But I think he splashed cold water on it. He kind of circumvented it a little bit. I think secretly or quietly, they're thinking about, I don't know if it's sending Park down and letting Sano DH for a while.
That's a possibility. I've written that too, and Terry denied that flatly. I said, well, have you considered sending Park to AAA? And
he
got a little testy because he said, I won't say he barked. He doesn't like bark, but he didn't bark, but he just said, if you got a question, just come out and say it. Don't dance around it. And I said, well, have you considered sending Park to AAA if this continues? And he goes, have I considered it? No. Well, maybe other people have, but it's something that they could do, and it's not just a couple of weeks. It's been overall he's been lost
about a month. Really,
the numbers are ghastly, and it's what they do. It's a textbook thing, and there's nothing wrong with it. Colton Wong went down to the minors for a few weeks. It would solve the issue of how do you get Sano out of right without trading Trevor Plouffe before he's rebuilt his value sufficiently.
And you can't bench Kepler right now.
No, I think you got to keep rolling with that.
He could play center, and you could send Buxton down. I mean, I'm keeping you way longer than I promised, so I'm sorry that. But this has been Mike Berardino. I appreciate you coming on.
Anytime.
And we'll have you in a couple weeks again. Who knows what we'll have to talk about once we're, 2 weeks from now. Are we right around 4th of July?
Yeah,
we might kick it out. We'll see what the holiday brings, but very excited for that. I think that we'll have the Twins will have the Rangers in town right around that time. So we'll have a lot of fun things to talk about. This has been Midwest Swing, episode number 23 for Brandon Warren. That's me, Mike Berardino, our featured guest today, and producer Tom Schreier. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Hello, my name is Zachary Bennett.
And this is Tim Fakeless.
And we are your co-hosts for the Wolves Wired Podcast. Be sure to tune in to the Wolves Wired Podcast on Monday mornings. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Now back to your regular programming.
If you're looking for some new perspective for sports talk, it's opinion-based sports talk with me, Michael Knight, on the Mike Talks Big Podcast. Joined weekly by Tom Schreier, Christina Madsen, and many other writers from the Cold Omaha Network. Mike Talks Big Podcast. It's the name of the podcast. It's the name of the Twitter account. It's also the name of the Facebook page. Heard Fridays right here on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter @ColdOmahaMN.
The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.